Hello and welcome to Inside Education with me, Sean Delaney. Although I usually qualify that by saying that Inside Education is the podcast for educators who are interested in teaching, this week's podcast is geared more towards parents. Inside Education is a weekly podcast about teaching, and you can listen to or download close to 400 previous episodes by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on podcasts. My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available from Routledge, and among the chapters in that book are ones on homework and assessment. You can write to me by emailing insideeducationpodcast@yahoo.com. You can follow me on Twitter, where I use the handle @InsideEd. Well, as I hinted at earlier, this week's programme is going to be of particular interest to parents. In particular, parents who have found themselves wanting to help their children with their education over the last few weeks, or those who may want to do so in the coming weeks. The difference is that most people who now find themselves getting involved in their child's education are doing so involuntarily. However, there is a substantial network of parents in Ireland for whom home education is a deliberate choice. And I've been speaking to two such home educators about their experience of choosing to educate their children at home themselves. Lorna Tormey previously worked as a buyer until motherhood changed all that and attachment parenting led her to home education when mainstream schooling wasn't suiting her child. She's now a full-time mum to Noah and Cara, home educating, unschooling and living life. She is on the committee of the Home Education Network. Pauline O'Reilly is a city councillor for the Green Party in Galway and she home educates her two children, Finn, aged 12 and Cara, aged 9. Formerly a solicitor, she has been at home with her children for the last number of years, home educating in the west of Ireland. She is a founder of Cún na Gcailleamh, Steiner National School in Galway, and is on the board of Galway Community Circus and a number of other community organisations. She has guest lectured on the BA with Children's Studies Pedagogy course in NUIG for the last 4 years on the topic of home education, and she has run 3 conferences on unschooling in Ireland with international speakers. You'll like this week's podcast if you've ever thought about home educating your children or if you want some guidance and reassurance about educating your child at home for this extended period of time. The podcast will share some of the benefits and challenges of removing responsibility for your children's education from a school and taking it on yourself. The podcast will delve into home education and help you appreciate how several people around the country educate their own children on a long-term basis. When I spoke to Pauline and Lorna, I began by asking Lorna why she chose home education for her children.
We came to it in a little bit of a roundabout way, although it is becoming a more popular choice for a lot of people whose children don't seem to suit the conventional education system. So I have 2 children, a boy who is 8 turning 9 and a little girl who has just gone 5. So we followed most of the conventional routes. Did some ECI, went on to primary school and was lucky to have a nice teacher for junior infants. And we thought we were kind of all set up and it was going to be a good option for us. I had actually looked into home education before he went to primary school, but kind of thought, oh no, we better just kind of stick with the conventional plan. But unfortunately, when he went into senior infants, we came up against a lot of kind of problems. His viewpoint on how he thought he should learn didn't really fit the conventional system. And we kind of supported him in that he doesn't like busy work, which I think is a lot of school time. He likes reason for what he's doing. And if he has a reason, he is quite capable of doing a lot of things. Doesn't like colouring. That seems to come up again for a lot of boys. and colouring for some reason seems to take up an awful lot of primary school. So yeah, so we unfortunately though, I laugh, but it did have a very big impact on him. And we muddled through senior infants, but by the end of senior infants, I realised that the school couldn't change to meet his needs and he couldn't change to fit into the school system, you know, square peg in a round hole. And we didn't want him to change either, really, deep down. So we decided no, that he would come out of school. We did actually try. He was school refusal by the time he went back to start first class.
So he was refusing to go to school?
Yeah, yeah. So we tried 3 days of first class with me sitting in the doorway. And that was probably the most painful 3 days of my life. And then I just said, no, there has to be a better option. And we took him out and we kind of gave ourselves a couple of months to kind of get our heads around the whole thing. You know, again, we still hadn't probably done our research. We had spent the previous couple of months trying to work out how we could work with the school to make things better, and they would change things, and we would hope that things would change, and that the new systems that they put in place would help him to get along better in the classroom. But nothing ever really seemed to change, or it would just fall back because the teacher wasn't there, or it was a different teacher, or just particular things couldn't be facilitated on a day. And it just had such an impact on home life and everything that I just knew there had to be a better option for us. So we took a couple of months when from that September, and people kind of said, oh, we should look at a different school. It was the school that we were in. And I was like, I really don't think it is. You know, I really think it is that you have to kind of conform to a certain degree to fit in with the school system. And I just don't think, I think we're going to come against these barriers no matter where we go. So we decided then by, I think, Christmas time, and just after Christmas, then we got in touch with TUSLA for registering to officially become home educators.
And you have a daughter as well, is that right?
Yeah.
She's younger, is she?
So she's just gone 5. So her peers and her friends went to school in September or are going this September. And so we've officially decided for her that she will also stay at home. Or I should say, she has actually officially decided for herself. She tried out Ekki and lasted about 2 months. And after weeks of getting greeted of a morning with, I'm playing and I can't go to school. Like, I'm too busy here. We decided, okay, no, it's actually, as a whole family decision, everybody has decided that home is where they want to be. So that is, we're just coming up on 3 years now, home educating.
Okay. And Pauline, what was your route to home education for your children?
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, Finn is 12 now, he'll be 13 in June. And sometimes you're inclined to think, you know, oh, it was just a snap decision, or but actually there's a lot of soul searching, I think, goes into it, whether your child was in school or not in school. And Finn never went to school. So different, I suppose, to Lorna's experience in some ways. But like, I've had a long involvement with HEN, with the Home Education Network, which I suppose we'll talk about later. And I think that about 50% of people are home educated from the start, and about 50% of people then remove their children from school. And that's borne out in the research statistically in the UK. So we're one of the ones who didn't go to school at all. Now, having said that, Finn did go to, he did go to Montessori, to preschool. And, you know, I suppose once we had the second child, then Cara, who's 9, a little bit similar in the sense that he just didn't really want to go anymore. I didn't really see any point. I mean, we were at home anyway. It had been a childcare option because I was working. I'm Slister originally. And then I was staying at home, and because I was on maternity leave, and there was just no real reason to be getting up with a small baby and bringing another small child to some place he didn't want to go. And he started reading when he was 2, and so he could read fluently by the time he was 2, and really he just wasn't getting anything educationally either out of it. So just gradually it reduced and reduced down. But it was still a difficult decision, like, in the sense that he said, I don't want to go to school. School was, you know, was being talked about. And I kind of knew what he meant was, I don't want to go to school, big school. And obviously you don't just rush off and say, oh, well, fine then, no problem. You know, child-led is never completely child-led, in the sense that it has to fit in with your philosophy. It has to fit in with everything like that. And I mean, he was down for several schools. And you know, I suppose I knew people who home educated. We had been in circles where we're long-term breastfeeders. You know, there's like a very natural kind of children learn in a particular way. This is the way that life is, that you look at all of the options. And one thing kind of moved into the other, then quite naturally, once we made the decision, there was no looking back. We said, we'll make this decision and we'll review it in 6 months, or we'll review it. Sorry, what we said was, when he's seven, because I was involved with starting a Steiner school in Galway as well. So I'm very involved with education for a really long time. And so my view was, well, there's no need for formal education till children really turn seven. And when he's seven, he'll go to school then. But within 6 months, it was just part of our lifestyle then, you know, and it just became the natural way that we lived our lives. It was natural then that Cara didn't go to school. So she, yeah, that's the way it went. But I mean, I always say to them, as I say, Finn's 12 now, nearly 13. And I always say to them every year, do you want to go to school? Because I think that if you really are truly following what's right for your child's education, then it's just as important that they know they have the option to do school as well. So yeah, that's where we are.
So you obviously have quite a bit of experience, whereas Lorna, you're newer to it. And mm-hmm. if I go back to each of you and ask you then, what's a typical day like when you're doing home education with your children? And Lorna, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. So a typical day for us, we would call ourselves unschoolers. And I think there's a high percentage of people who home educate are unschooling in various different degrees.
And what does unschooling mean?
So unschooling is, it's a hard thing to define again, but...
Is it anti-schooling? You're not trying to replicate school at all, is that
It's
right?
A very funny word, and to be honest, I probably would love if somebody could come up with a different word for it. It's a word that's gone around a long time and was coined by John Holt, who is somebody who's revered in home education circles, if people want to look into it further. But so it is child-led, but it's not that the child isn't supported. So we would be like quite active in supporting him and his decisions and what, and well, both of them, of what they want to learn, but we don't sit and try and replicate school at home. So that's basically what it's not. And I think a lot of people, like I said, even if you do start out homeschooling, as in sitting down at a table with books, I think very quickly people realise that that doesn't always work, and then branch out into various different ways of home educating that suits their home. So for us and our situation with our eldest coming out of school, he had an awful lot of trauma and he was school refusal. So he actually was and is, although it's getting slightly better, is completely anti anything that looks like school. Doesn't want to see paper, doesn't want to write. So I would have probably started out on my journey doing more school at home, but very quickly I realised that I was actually just replicating what the teachers were doing, and I could see how anxious it made him. So I had to very quickly brush up my knowledge on unschooling and get my head around the whole thing. So we follow Noah's lead and what it is that he wants to do. A typical day is we take very kind of quiet mornings. We don't generally rush off anywhere. The kids, Noah loves technology, so he spends a lot of time on technology. We support that. Both myself and my husband actually studied IT, so we're kind of big techies in our house. I think it's an amazing resource, and I think people are really seeing that now in the current climate. So,
when you say he spends time on technology, what's he doing with the technology?
Anything. He has gaming, so he online games with some of his friends. He has apps, obviously, varying different, some are educational, some are not. Some are just fun games that us as adults would play. But again, we don't separate life and learning. Through our life, we learn. And I have seen that over the past, 3 years, that it really is true. They learn so much no matter what it is, even from, as some people hate, YouTube. But they can learn so much through YouTube. And even myself as an adult, I have gone to it for so many how-to-do videos. It's such an amazing resource, although sometimes it gets a really bad name. So in our house, we use everything that's at our disposal, and we're happy for the kids to do that, and we're there alongside them. as they're trying to find out the information that they want to find, depending on the day and depending on the topic of what it is that they want to do.
So there's no particular benchmarks that you're trying to reach, or there's no particular curriculum that you're following as such?
No, we've no curriculum to follow, and we're happy that way. Again, living life, I don't think you have to separate down into subjects. I think it's a pity that school is so focused on maths has to be learnt at maths time and English has to be learnt at English time. The subjects all overlap.
So, or what about, say, something like learning to read, for example?
Well, Noah learned how to read the basics in school, junior, because he had completed junior and senior infants. And the only reading that we would really do at home is stories sitting, and we would read to him. We never forced, again, because of the trauma that he had coming out of school, we never forced him to read to us or to prove to us that he was reading. Although it very quickly became apparent with the amount of reading that he was doing, with the level of, again, over the past 3 years, how articulate he is and how he has learned to read beyond obviously what he was taught in junior and senior infants in school. So yeah, so we read to him and we're happy to do that. And it's just, it's been amazing how naturally an example, say for instance, that you have moments where you do fall back into kind of school thinking. And it was that I wondered how will we explain grammar and how will that all come up? And he came to me there a couple of months ago, and there's an online gaming called Roblox. And he came to me and he said, I need to know what grammar is. And I was like, wow, okay. And I said, no, why do you need to know what grammar is? Well, I need to know it for one of my games. They asked, there's a question in it that says, what is grammar? I was like, okay, great. Well, let's find out what grammar is. And we went through it all in a very practical way and for the way that he needed to do it. And I just sat back and I said, okay, what people have been telling me over the past, couple of years and all my research I've been doing is, it completely is true. I see it every day. So yeah, so we game, but again, we spend an awful lot of time outdoors. We really don't spend a lot of time at home. Most days, we try and take a day at home and a day out. So we'll have a day at home where it's probably quite relaxed and chilling out. And then we would have a day where we're out meeting friends in the community, at activities. And
when you say meeting friends, are they friends who are also home educating?
Yes. So the home education community is enormous. You don't have to worry when you join about finding friends. We're Dublin based, so we obviously have quite a high proportion of home educators, and we have such access to, we can go into Dublin or we can go into the countryside, and we can go either direction to meet people, and that's what we do. So sometimes we may be in the city at museums, and other times we might be out in the countryside, we might be in playgrounds. We also took a very big trip up to the planetarium in Armagh, so we go all over with our home education friends. It's brilliant.
And Pauline, how does that experience compare to yours?
It's changed over the years, and I think this is the crucial thing. Sometimes we can be really dogmatic about what it is we're trying to achieve through education. And for me, it's really about allowing yourself to see things differently all of the time based on where your children are. Now, when they were younger, we used to do an awful lot of going to playgrounds, and every day was spent doing a lot of that. But as they're older, they make their own decisions over what it is, how they want to spend their time. Like, if you look at, and I know Lorna mentioned there, John Holt, like really all of the literature is around the fact that children, as mammals and as animals, want to learn, and they're curious about their worlds, and they want really to be valuable members of their society. And if we're to take a pedagogical look at what education means, what we're trying to achieve, it is about socializing young human beings into the society in which they're born. And I think that that happens in a very natural way if we're really present for it. So there is no getting up at 9 and doing maths. And again, we unschool, and I've had quite a few different people come over from, you say, the UK or the US to talk about this over the years. it's called unschooling, but in the UK it's called autonomous education. But again, as Lorna said, autonomous doesn't mean just leave a child in a room by themselves, because where's the social learning then? Where's the society that they're actually learning to be part of? So I think that's a critical element, that you need to be present for it. So if we talk about an actual routine, a friend of mine said to me, this is going back a good few years, and she said, like, you think you have no routine, but actually you have a weekly routine. And that's probably correct. You know, we know this is what we do on Mondays, this is what we do on Tuesday. So, you know, at the moment we have our weekly routine, and I guarantee you in 6 months' time that weekly routine will be entirely different based on where the learning experience is at that moment.
You said you're a solicitor. Did you have to give up your work as a solicitor in order to do this?
Yes.
And was that sacrifice worth making?
It absolutely was. And I suppose we were in a position where we didn't have a mortgage, but we had rent. So we've had to cut our cloth. And so we live in a very modest kind of way in many ways. However, I'm now actually a city councillor. So I do work, and I do work in the community, and I've long had really long hours at doing work in the community, from starting a school, from all of those things. So it's not entirely that, yes, if you had a 9 to 5, that's gone. You know, you can't have all the adults in the house working 9 to 5. But things change over time. Yes, sorry.
And your son, he's 12, 13 now. He's at the age where in other families they would be thinking about post-primary school. Mm. Is that something that you've thought about, that you might consider going to a regular post-primary school, or will he continue home education, or have you thought about that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's constantly there in your mind, and obviously the kids are part of that. I don't believe in, at a very young age, in constantly having that discussion, what do we do, you know, because that's unfair. Children can't have that many choices. But certainly, like, over the last few years, we've discussed it with him, and what he's always said is, I want to go to university, and so I go into school to do my Leaving Cert. And that's actually what an awful lot of home ed kids do. They go in for the last year or the last 2 years of school, and they do the Leaving Cert, because it's becoming much more difficult to do the Leaving Cert from home, where you used to be able to do that with the kind of continuous assessment. You can't do it. So you'd have to have a very generous school that will allow your child's work to be signed off. So that's an option. Another option is doing the baccalaureate, or doing the GCSEs, doing the A-levels, and quite a few home ed families also choose that option. But it's really, my experience from talking to teenagers is, they start making those decisions at about 16, looking at all the options, what have they decided to do? Now, it may very well be that Finn does decide to go into secondary school before that, but it would be his decision. And it wouldn't be for educational reasons, because he certainly, neither of the children would be behind. And we haven't done any of the curriculum, but learning happens in very intense ways. And then it happens in a grouped kind of way, like maths, and then no maths, and it's all reading, and then, you know, and then it's all history. And it doesn't happen like 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, but it still happens in a really deep kind of way, you know.
And given that your approach to your children's education would be, as some people might see it, more unstructured, you still don't have any concerns that should they decide to go to post-primary school, that they would have any difficulties fitting in, and particularly from an educational point of view?
Well, fitting in, like, what is fitting, but I mean, well, academic.
That they'd be able for the content, that they'd be able for the material that would be done, and that would ultimately be examined as part of a Leaving Certificate, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you have to be practical about it. Obviously, it's not just a case of, well, they have the ability to do this, like my daughter's doing algebra now because she just wants to. Like, but at the same time, there are certain things, and you look at the Leaving Cert paper and there are certain things come up, and it's not like you can't just say, oh, well, you've been learning all your life, sit down and do the Leaving Cert. That's certainly not the case. Like, it would have to be decision made over a few years and building up towards that. You wouldn't drop a child in. But all of the experiences that I've had, all of the research will say that that can happen in a much quicker space of time than 6 years, than 5 years, if that's what you really put your mind to. In the same way as, you know, you go back and do a master's, or you retrain for something else. Like, we are constantly learning, and we're doing it often for specific purposes. And it's, you'd have to work at it, like.
And you say your daughter is doing algebra because she wants to do algebra. Where did she even come across the idea of algebra?
Just through chatting. I think Finn might have said something like about letters, maths, and she was upset, and she said, well, I think that's really unfair to have letters, maths, because numbers are so amazing, and it's unfair to maths to bring in letters to it. And then he said, no, actually, it's called algebra. So she said, okay, well, then I'm happier then. Maths is left alone and algebra's got its own space. And that just started a whole, I suppose, conceptual thing in her head that she really liked the sound of. So I just started on the back of an envelope explaining what algebra was. But I actually had to work it out myself because I couldn't remember. But that was fine. You know, that came up and that was fine. And they both read a lot, and they both chat to other people, and they come up with something, and I have no idea how they know that, but they have a lot of other relationships apart from mine, I suppose.
Lorna, you and Pauline, you've explained how you approach home education yourselves. Are you aware of how other families approach home education, and how it might be different to or similar to what you do?
Yes, like there are people doing it in various different ways, and there are people who do sit at the table and do follow curriculums. There are also so many different types of curriculums, as Pauline mentioned, for like Steiner schools. There's a lot of people that would follow a lot of the Steiner philosophies at home, and there'd be a lot of people who would research. There's so many different curriculums from homeschoolers in the US. And so I think you can find a curriculum for any interest that your child has. We have a particular interest in Star Wars in our house, and I'm pretty sure I already have gone looking for various different pieces of material, and you can pretty much learn anything through Star Wars, or I think if you like horses, ponies, anything else. So there's so much information out there. You can teach in any various different way that you want to, and people do.
And where do you find reliable information that you can trust about home education that could be useful, say, to other parents who are in that situation, even now for a temporary period of time?
Is that question based on for curriculum, or?
Maybe for curriculum or for resources or materials or ideas even. Now, I know you said that a lot of the ideas come directly from your son and what he's interested in, or your daughter, but you know, where do you get ideas, or are there sources of information that you find helpful?
I suppose just all the kind of general, there's so much going around. You can see at the moment, a lot of the different companies have opened up their resources. There are some new resources that I haven't seen, but there are obviously ones that have been around, like Khan Academy. And I know that a lot of homeschoolers have signed up and used those. I suppose we're still in a very kind of play-based approach at the moment, with the ages that our kids are. So, and obviously my own knowledge, if there is a particular subject comes up, like Pauline said, sometimes I just kind of have to do a quick brush up myself to remind myself. But so I suppose I'm drawing on my own knowledge at this stage, and yes, double checking what I find on the internet, and then see if it suits them to show them in that way. But yeah, we base most of ours around play. So I suppose I'm not looking in too deeply into the resources that are available. So I don't know if I have a real direct answer to that question.
But you didn't have a background in teaching or anything yourself before this?
I didn't, no. Like that, I studied IT and didn't end up working in it, but which also kind of has made me rethink now this far along. Is the path we follow, is that the right way to do things? you know, you kind of, you go through, I followed the standard primary school, secondary school, went straight to college, didn't know what I wanted to do, did IT, didn't end up working in IT, and then you go and retrain again. So I don't have a teaching background, but I've never felt that I wasn't the primary educator. Since my kids were very little, and Pauline touched on this, we would have been attachment parenting, and I've always felt that home was the right place for my kids, and that I can teach them anything that they need to be taught. I don't feel that teachers, although I respect the fact that they have gone and learn how to teach, but again, I think from what I've heard, a lot of teachers kind of, you know, plan out what they're going to teach next week, and they also brush up on their skills of what the subject is that they're going to cover next week. Parents are more than capable, I feel.
Pauline, Lorna mentioned there that a lot of home educators follow the Steiner principles, and you were involved in the Steiner School in Galway, you said. Can you say a little bit about Steiner and what was particularly interesting about his approach to education?
I suppose in Steiner education, just generally, there's it's very outdoors. It's about the whole child. Learning is done, reading is done through the child's own writing rather than through curriculum books. And a lot is around rhythms of the day and having transitions between rhythms of the day that may be very arts focused, like a song that brings you from one stage to another, baking and hands, heart and head is what they say, and bringing the three together. So using the children's hands is really important. Now, we don't actually follow the Steiner curriculum because, like, in a sense, a curriculum is important when you've got a lot of children in one space together. But I think that even though people do follow a curriculum for a long period of time, what you will find, and again, the research will bear this out, is that if people start with a curriculum, it often relaxes over time because you have a relationship one-on-one with each child, and their individual needs come to the surface. And it's much more difficult for a child to say, no, I'm not doing that, to a teacher. They have no problem saying that to their parent. And so you have to ways around it, you know, and you have to work with the person, because it's a relationship in the end of the day. And yeah, you're learning in a relationship as opposed to me teaching a person.
If they can say no to you so easily, does that mean that it's easy for them to shy away from either challenging work or difficult subjects? Like, I'm thinking maybe about Irish, or even say something like algebra or something that may be a bit more challenging, and that they may kind of want to do lots of drawing and lots of physical education or things that are more inherently enjoyable, perhaps.
Well, I suppose the point that I'm trying to make is that the relationship stops going down. It doesn't go down that route. It doesn't go down a route of, I'm giving you all of this stuff and you have to do it. It goes down a different route, and that's a collaborative route. And that's a route based on, where are they today? I know that yesterday this child knew about just bringing X into an equation. Therefore, I know next week maybe I'll bring in X and Y. But if you were following a curriculum, you wouldn't do that. And then there might be an instance where you might then find, well, the child doesn't know the months of the year, but they might be experts in algebra. So it has to change like that. So, but the point there about challenging things, I think honestly, to really be equipped and to understand challenging things, you have to want to do it. You have to really want to be immersed in a thing. Now, obviously, when it comes to languages, I throw in the couple of fuckle throughout the day. You know, and I have a degree in Spanish as well. So I'll say a bit of Spanish, even though it's not great. It's enough, you know, to get me through, and it's enough to see where those interests are bubbling. So absolutely, I think you need to present opportunities for learning to the children. But I certainly wouldn't be saying, I really want you to know algebra, we must do it, you know, because that's just like, that's a dead duck. There's no way any child, even in a school, would know
would want that.
But do you worry then that there might be gaps in their education?
But you see, that's only if you if you look at it from a particular perspective. Mm. I mean, you, like gaps according to who, you know, this is what we have to ask ourselves. Like, who are we measuring ourselves against? And in the end of the day, everybody that I know who's home educated and who goes to school and who does the Leaving Cert does absolutely as well as the next person, even if they're unschooled. Because if you have a purpose in mind, this is what I need to achieve, this is what I want to achieve, therefore I will, you do. And if you look at the A levels and compare it to the Leaving Cert, you could equally say there's gaps when you compare the A levels to the Leaving Cert, because sure, they only do 3 or 4 subjects and we do a million subjects. So, you know, where does it stop though? How many more subjects do we say we've ticked a box for before we say that a child has learned? In the end of the day, if they are consumed by something and passionate about something, what they're really learning is how to learn and how to inform themselves. And just as we're having this conversation now and people are listening, I'm going to pick up a book, I'm going to pick up a newspaper, I'm still learning and nobody's there with, you know, holding my arm behind my back. You know, maybe I don't like Sky News, so that means I'm not going to watch Sky News. But, you know, but it, does that mean there's a gap in my learning? Who's to say?
I would challenge, Sean, if I could, just on your point of, do children shy away from challenging work? And I think your example was based on, you know, the maths. So I love maths. I would do maths all day long. A challenging subject for me would be art. So, you know, you have to look at it from that perspective. And also, I'm happy if my children follow their passion. And I'm happy if one already has a massive interest in everything technology, and maybe his brain will go that way. If the other child has an interest in science or art or any other subject and they follow that, I'm okay with the fact that they will have a basic level of the other subjects through, you know, what we do. Will they have covered everything exactly up to Leaving Cert or wherever our journey follows? But of what benefit is it? We already know that most children learn for exams and forget it, you know, a couple of months later. So what value is that? I don't remember everything. I did French for 6 years. I couldn't speak probably 5 words of French now to you if you asked. So what benefit is that to me? And is it inhibiting my life, my daily life at the moment? No. So I think you have to look at, we look at it from a very different viewpoint, or most home educators do.
Given that your children don't have, say, an inherent structure to their day, do they ever come to you and say, "Mom, I'm bored"?
Yeah.
Or, and how do you respond to that?
I'm like, great. You'll find something to do. Like, or, well, what do you want to do? Let's think of something. And I throw out options. Sometimes it's, do you want to help me in the house? No, is generally the answer. Or, you know, here's this activity, here's this game that we haven't taken out in a while. So we go through all the options of what it is we want to do. And then we normally hit upon something, or they potter off again and absorb themselves in a game and I follow along. So that's generally how our day goes.
And what about you, Pauline?
Well, you know, I remember as a child being bored, and then I would make up some game and it was great. And I think that we've gotten to this habit of filling every ounce of every day of all of our lives, and good God, we've no imagination left, you know. So yeah, my kids, they do get bored, and then very soon they'll find something to do. But I think I read this, it was one of the home educator kind of the people who'd done research into home education talking about, you know, how great it is that a child sits there, closes one eye, opens it, closes the other eye, opens it, and closes both eyes, and then feels, you know, what was different about all those 3 experiences, and has the time to do that. And then it brings them to something new. I mean, one of my kids writes a lot and plays a huge amount of Dungeons and Dragons with his friends, and it has a really creative, you know, outlook on life. And that's through finding everyday experiences. He has his notebook and he'll be writing them down. Got an idea for something, you know, instead of, well, no, you can't have time for ideas now. This isn't idea time, you know. This is a time where I'm telling you what to do so you won't be bored.
And was it his idea to have the notebook or was that your suggestion?
Oh, no, definitely his. Absolutely. I mean, there was a time where he didn't write at all. And I thought, God, this child will never write. And now he's constantly, I got notebooks everywhere with lists of things, with values of things, with, you know, it started off with Pokemon. And then he made up his own Pokemon characters. And then he has like, he's a dungeon master for a home ed group once a week. So he's coming up with ideas for that throughout the week. So he has a notebook for that. Then he's in another Dungeons and Dragons group on a Sunday with school kids. And so that's another campaign that's ongoing. So there's stuff going on all the time that he has to prepare for, you know.
And you're describing a lot about what he does. How do you see your role, or how actively involved are you in his education now, say that he's 12, 13 and his sister is 9?
A lot less than I was. I mean, when he was younger, it was nonstop. And I think it can be challenging for people in the early days of being there all of the time for a child, and whether your child's in school or they're not in school. But no, I'm not hugely, other than he'll say, I want, you know, can we look at doing this? Can we look at, for instance, downloading Zoom recently, like a lot of kids have been doing? Oh, there's this book that I'd like. And then you have a discussion about that. We have a lot of discussions and chats are mainly, rather than anything else. And then I'll question him on things, you know. Well, why do you really think that? What makes you, or those kind of things? And they could go on forever. But a little bit of board games still happens. But, you know, like, children move away from you and you have to allow that to happen and create other relationships for them.
How would you describe your involvement at the moment, Lorna? Because your children are younger, obviously, than Pauline's.
Yes, so I'm very hands-on. And because I have a little one who's only 5 and she is mad into any kind of arts and crafts and all sorts of activities. And so, yeah, that is quite, that's busy and that's challenging, but it's obviously super enjoyable and it's great to have the time. I think one of the things that I've learned is, although I might even have an idea of the activity that we're going to do, or I might have seen something online and thought, oh, that's a great thing to do, so I set out all the material, but I think it's amazing to actually see when they come to the table or to the floor to participate, where they take the activity and to allow their imagination, and sometimes they can amaze you with what they come up with. And just naturally I've been blown away by, maybe it's beads or sequins or anything, you know, for arts and crafts. And all of a sudden she's sorting and she's patterns and it is all the things that I remember Noah doing in junior infants. But he had to do it on a piece of paper, on a worksheet that was set out, and he had to be doing it the same way as the other 30 children in his class. And it is amazing that she is just doing it herself without, you know, me kind of sitting there saying, okay, arrange them all into a pattern, or pick out, you know, make a pile with all the green ones and a pile with all the red ones. She just does it herself and can happily sit there for, you know, 15, 20 minutes doing that. Noah, I have had to learn how to game more. So my interest in that, in learning in that side is, I think a lot of parents look negatively on gaming. And I have changed my viewpoint in that the kids love it, and sometimes we have to actually learn as the parents, and we have to join them in what they want to do. And actually, if you sit and get involved in it, you see the skill and you see the strategy and you see the thinking out and the planning and the organization. It's amazing. So that's so we split our time, and then I'm really lucky my husband is there in the evenings and is quite involved then, obviously, in their education once he gets home. So we're both very hands-on.
And you've described it there as super enjoyable, but there must be days when it's difficult, or you kind of wish, oh, I just wish they were in school, or I wish I was working in IT again, or something like that. How do you deal with those kinds of days when they happen?
Yeah, I definitely do need to have something for myself. So I do have little projects. And like I said, when my husband comes home, I might slip away then for an hour or two and do something for myself. But I have to say, I have not had a bad day at home like I have had the bad days in school with Noah. So I could never actually say that I've ever wished for him to be back in school. The uncertainty of where the day brought us when he was in school, you never knew what was going to happen. Whereas being at home, if your kids get up and they're tired, you can allow the day to unfold that way. So, okay, we're busy, or somebody's maybe a little bit under the weather, we can watch movies, we can have a down day, and they can recuperate, and then they can kind of get back to themselves, as opposed to, you know, dragging kids out of bed and, you know, they have to get to school and then they're exhausted from obviously giving all their energy over to school, and then they come home. And then sometimes as parents, you want more from them as well in the evening, because you're kind of thinking, oh, I haven't seen you all day, so talk to me and tell me, and I want to do things with you. And actually, they don't have any energy left for you in the evening. So our life at the moment, I have to say, I could not be happier. And the majority of people who, and over the past 3 years, I've seen a lot of people come along and join different home ed groups and are on the fence about doing it, and they've really worried about that. But none of them I have heard that have actually ever kind of wished to go back. They've actually found it a really, really positive experience for them and their whole family.
Pauline, how have you found the resources or the network that is the home education network? How has that been helpful for you in your role as a home educator?
I think particularly in the early days was very important. And I was the chair of HEN for a couple of years, hugely involved in the organisation. And I'd still go to the, we have conference for 3 days every year, and we camp at that. And I think what, for me, the most important part of that experience is that the kids get to say, it's almost like, this is my class, you know, this is who I am, this is, because inevitably most people are at school. So they get to say, well, this is my group, you know, just even knowing it's there is important, I feel. And that puts my mind at ease because of that. But overall, we spend a lot of time with kids who are in school as well. It's been important for me because we have a lot of meetups, and it facilitates that. But that's even done on, you know, it might not necessarily be through HEN, but we have Facebook groups. We have a yoga group once a week. As I say, there's the Dungeons and Dragons once a week. There's science groups that go. There's every week then there's a kind of a much larger group activity as well. So you can come and go from those things. The large group activities are not really relevant for my family anymore, because we have relationships, we have families that come to our house, the kids go to their house, they could spend the whole day there. But it has facilitated making those relationships, which have lasted over a long time, so that the kids have long relationships with children from when they were young.
So socialization with other children, that hasn't been a problem for you, because that's one of the arguments that's often given in favor of conventional schooling.
Definitely not. And I would say the reverse, really, because it allows you to do it in a way that's kind of more suitable. And it means that, like, I have a child who's an introvert, and I have a child who's less of an introvert, and you know, I suppose kind of the standard in between introvert and extrovert. She's outside all of the time when the kids come home from school playing, and they're in our house or she's in their house. We've a very much a, you know, open house in that sense. But then for the other child, who is much more solitary, he has his friends, it works for him. But we still go to events so that he's exposed to different people, or we're out in the community, because, as I said, do a lot of voluntary work. For him, it's not this sensory overload that actually he can experience quite easily. It's a much more gradual thing, you know. So absolutely that I don't believe that the socialization is an issue, but I do think when we were starting out, you know, we're over the west of the country, so you can find places where people feel much more isolated, and so people do have to be proactive. This isn't real home education in the sense that real home education is about being part of a community, and not a home ed community, but a living community made up of everybody in society. So I think that you do have to be cognizant of that and reach out to other home educators to experience and to start up groups if you're feeling isolated.
We're coming near the end, and if I come back to you, Lorna, and I'll come to you as well, Pauline, what kind of advice would you give to people who are in the situation? As I say, maybe it is involuntary for most of them and it's short term, but where they are maybe feeling under pressure or feeling that they want to do something with their children to advance their education while they can't attend school for whatever period of time. What kind of advice would you give to them based on your own experiences of home education or on the experiences of other families that you know about who have been through it already?
I would definitely say to them maybe to read up a little bit on play-based learning, no matter what age their children are, you know, even if it is teenagers, there still is so much to be gained from play. And I think that that's okay for the kids to be doing that at the moment. If you do feel like the teachers have sent home a little bit of work and the kids are interested, maybe you have one child that is interested, you might have another child that isn't interested in doing the school work. Yeah, obviously go with it. If it's causing arguments and upset at home, I personally would take a step back from it and try and make it the best out of the situation that we're all in, and that we all come out of it, and the children especially, looking back on it as a positive. Not that they see it as a negative time, that there is something nice, that this was the time where, you know, mum and dad were home and we played board games each lunchtime, or, you know, that they will have a nice memory coming out of it. From the perspective, which I do think a lot of parents worry about, is that the children will have a gap in their education because they whatever amount of time they will miss. I think a great thing, again, to look into is actually world schooling. And there's a lot of people who have taken their children out of school for a year, 3 months, 6 months. There's loads of resources that you can read on it. And they have all reported that the children slotted back into school without any issues. Obviously, I suppose the difference would be that those children were out in the community learning. But I suppose there is so much that you can do from home following the children's interests that they can, you know, they can use this couple of months to put extra time into a hobby or, you know, musical instrument or a language, whatever it is that they are interested in. So I think the most of the research, and having done an awful lot of work for myself into it, nobody has really come up with any damning results that a child missing, you know, 2 weeks, a month, or even a year, if they're in a loving, caring environment where the parents are there and active and being involved with them, they seem to fare fine. So I think if that's a little bit of, you know, good news for them.
Pauline, if I put the same question to you, advice for parents who are involuntarily home educating at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's obviously it is stressful for people because they haven't chosen it, but we are all educators, whether our children are in school or out of school. We are all educating our children outside of those hours. And just reminding yourself that you know these people and you love these people and they love you. And be kind to yourself and be gentle with yourself, because even Tusla will say that they recognise that de-schooling is important when children are taken out of school. And de-schooling is where you just relax and you don't try to follow anything other than just really observing what it is that will bring the most joy to your children in that period of time. And if it brings joy, that's the best learning experience that you could possibly have. So chat, as Lorna said, play board games, and see what comes of it. And then in the middle of it, a child will, as an interest will be sparked in learning about the values of money. And then that's the time to say, you know, oh, well, that's something that we'll explore a little bit further, because it sparked an interest. And they're the moments that will really make education happen. Not those moments of stress between you and your children that's going to create conflict and actually a negative experience about what education can be, because children want to be educated and they just love learning. So go with it.
Advice there to follow your instinct in educating your child from Pauline O'Reilly and Lorna Tormey from the Home Education Network. You can find out more about the network at www.henireland.org, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes for this week. That brings this week's Inside Education to a close. You can listen back to this and hundreds of previous episodes of Inside Education by going to my website, seandelaney.com, and clicking on podcasts. You can write to me by email to insideeducationpodcast@yahoo.com. You can follow me on Twitter @InsideEd. If you like this week's episode, please leave a rating and a review of the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. It helps more educators find out about it. My book about teaching is Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have and is available from good libraries and online bookstores. Until the next time, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.